Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Welcome everybody. Here we are again, another great episode of your favourite podcast. I hope you're doing well out there. It's still strange times, but we're doing this because just to show that we're all in this together and we're still here. I'm trying to support you. You're supporting me. We're all having a great time. Thank you again for your continued support. It's lovely. Thank you. I couldn't do it without you. Or producer Paul, actually. I couldn't do it at all without producer Paul. Thank you so much. We've got a couple of new Patreons on board. We've got Bethan and Danny. Thank you so much, Bethan and Danny, for joining us, helping us keep this thing going. Really appreciate that. Anybody else would like to join us on the Patreon, just to help us just keep it going. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much to our continued support, for your continued support. Thank you very much indeed. And we will continue to do this as long as you want us to do it. So thank you. Thank you very much. So on with the show. Our guest this week, Giles Paley Phillips. And Giles is a children's author, children's book author, that we sort of connected online, and I was impressed with his positive outlook, and he's always just out there putting out positivity in an increasingly hostile world, it seems. And I just wanted to get him on and have a chat, and it was such a lovely thing to do. He's such a lovely man. You'll hear that in the episode. He's a really nice guy. You'll really get a lot out of this. I felt buoyed afterwards. His energy is spectacular. He's just a very positive man. So we'll just get on with it, shall we? So without further ado, coming up in a bit, Giles Paley Phillips.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well. It's lovely to finally speak to you.
Yeah, and you.
Lovely stuff. Are you well? Are you all right?
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah.
It's so cold. I mean, I can't believe how cold it is.
Where are you? Down on the south coast still?
Yeah, so I'm in Seaford, which is kind of between Brighton and Eastbourne, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a funny one because it's sort of in between all these sort of slightly less... I was going to say not as nice. That sounds a bit mean to the people of the likes of Newhaven and Peacehaven. But it's kind of on its own in a way because it's this sort of really pretty little sort of sleepy town, which has got obviously got its own beach and stuff and is right near the South Downs and,
nice.
The Seven Sisters, which is a, really iconic space, which seems to be used in lots of films recently.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, it's not... I love that area. My nan used to live in Burgess Hill, so...
Oh, okay, my wife works in Burgess Hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she works at St Paul's, which is the Catholic church. The Catholic secondary school.
Amazing.
Yeah, which used to be in Hayward Heath, but it's now in Burgess Hill.
Right.
Yeah, so she goes there... Well, she's not going there at the moment, but... I don't know Burgess Hill that well.
No.
I have to say.
It was a lot of time. I was a kid when we were down there. Yeah. So I remember it was Munns Drive, which is near the station. And then I remember we'd either go into the little village or we go up into the town centre. But it wasn't really, never explored. It was all right.
Was the triangle there then?
Yes.
Yeah, because we sometimes take the kids to the triangle because it's got a few nifty things in it, like it's got a slide, it's got all the mod cons. It's
That's
got
it.
a wave machine.
I remember we used to get taken to Lewisham to the shopping centre because it had a play area in the middle, which was a slide in the shape of a giraffe. And I used to be so excited to go and see that when I was a kid. And then living over that way a few years ago, you walk past. I remember seeing it as an adult and going, wow, it's tiny. Used to think it was massive, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's just this tiny little slide. I miss that. I miss all that. I recently was, I grew up in Orpington.
Okay.
And I took a walk from my mum and dad's house back through where I used to walk to school. And yeah, it was like loads of stuff being knocked down and, yeah, the scout hut was completely collapsed and
I think what it's funny, isn't it, scouting and cubs. My eldest did it for a bit and then he just got super bored with it and I just feels like it might be a bit of a dying
I think
thing.
So. Yeah, well, we those skills that we thought we'd need later on.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Were you a Cub Scout? Were you?
I was, for a bit, and then I got the uniform, and then I didn't want to go anymore.
Yeah, that's it. As soon as you're in the Circle of Trust, you want to get out of it.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
It's like, I don't know if it's feeling that important bit where you're asked, you go and do your dib-dab-dob, and, you sort of pledge your allegiance.
Yeah.
And then once that's over, it's like kind of like, I can't be... Can't be fat with this now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've achieved this. I don't need to do anymore.
Yeah.
But it's funny because my mum and dad never let me forget it. It comes up all the time. Yeah, when I see mum and dad, they're like, well, we bought you the uniform and you never bloody went again. Like, I was six or however old I was.
Well, I think that's the thing. You see, like, it's a commitment, isn't it? I think we thought about my son Elijah going and doing the next, getting all the gear and that, and I'm thinking, actually, do you know what this is going to cost us? it's going to cost quite a lot. Are you sure, mate? You know, like trying to talk him out of it.
Yeah.
Are you sure you really enjoy this? Because, you know, you didn't. The other day you came back and you didn't seem like you really had a good evening. So, you know, it's a lot of investment for us.
Yeah. And you're like, but I don't mind spending the money. I just want to make sure, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
So it's quite funny. So you've got, I like to obviously do research on the people that we're having on just to, so. You know, so I know a bit about you, and it's funny seeing that you've written children's books, and you've played Glastonbury.
Oh no!
And that's quite the juxtaposition,
quite a segue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite the, you know, because most people listening to this would have gone to, if not Glastonbury, they've gone to a festival. So you know, that's how was it playing it?
Oh, I mean, God, it seems like it was a lifetime ago. I mean, it was the year 2000. It was the year Bowie was headlining.
Wow.
So it was a good year. And it was also the year that Glastonbury had the most gatecrashers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, clearly they heard we were playing. But, it was crazy. You just saw people just bolting over the fences, you know, or under them, like crawling under. It was bizarre. It was so busy. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds. I mean, I know there are normally hundreds of thousands of people there, but it was just incredible how many people were there. I think they even cancelled it the year after to sort out all the security anyway, it was thrilling. I mean, to be able to play was obviously amazing, and we decided to rough it as well. We didn't want to, because we had backstage passes, but we decided we didn't want to stay in the backstage bit. We wanted to camp with our tribe. You know, we want to camp with the real people. We want to soak up the real Glastonbury. And so that was quite nice, and we were quite near the pyramid stage. There's a big bit of camping just kind of about 200 yards kind of behind, so it felt like we were in a really good place.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, have you been to Glastonbury?
Yes, first time I went as a punter was, that would have been 2002, so it would have been the first year that they put the new fence in. So it was all that, and all the all the crusties were at the gate.
Yeah,
and every time you go out to get to your car, I remember being accosted by a few of them. They're like, "Oh, show us the wristband. Oh, how does that work? And what do you need to go with that?" And they were asking me all these questions.
Man,
and I'm like, "I don't know. He's like, "Oh, can I have a look at your thing?" I'm like, "No, you can't. Go, don't be touching my stuff, man."
Yeah,
but I've heard stories of people when it was just a fence and they were flinging. They would tunnel under, or they would there'd be ladders all around it, and it was absolute carnage. So.
It was, man. The year we went, it was carnage. It was real carnage. It was interesting now. And I think in some respects, it was quite nice to be there when it was so chaotic.
A bit more raw,
Yeah, really raw. And I mean, there was such incredible bands playing that year as well. I mean, stuff that I really liked.
Yeah.
I mean, our stage, we had, we were on the new band stage, which was, I guess, would probably be the John Peel stage now, but I think it was a bit smaller in those days, probably about 4,000 or 5,000 capacity. So, I'm saying small, that's still huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the tents are pretty big at Glastonbury, aren't they? There aren't many small ones. And we were first on Saturday morning, 11 o'clock. I think we were second on, and thinking no one is going to come and see us. People have been there for 2 days already, some of them.
Right.
Most of them are probably fucked. They're not going to want to get up at 11 o'clock in the morning.
And if they're and still up, they're not going to be in the right state of mind.
Yeah, exactly. So we thought, we sort of really tackled it military style. We got a load of flyers and we literally the Friday we went round. It was quite nice anyway, because we went round the whole festival just giving out flyers to people to try and get people to come along, because we were a tiny little band, no one really probably would have heard of us, we just really did that, and that was quite nice because we got to see, you know, we really ventured out and saw the whole site, and that was quite nice, just sort of wandering around taking it all in and thinking, wow, we're at this like huge event, you know. I think that was nice to be able to do that. And then we played, we played that 11 o'clock slot. And actually, quite a few people did turn up, which was nice.
Oh, that's cool. It went all right.
It went all right. Yeah, it went all right. It went really, it went pretty well. You know, that's the thing you're worried about. We're going to be playing to no one, which is, you know, quite a lot of the time when you're in a gigging band touring around, you are generally playing to no one.
Oh,
I mean,
you're
a comedian.
You know
what it's like.
Oh, yeah. Stood in many an empty room talking to chairs.
Yeah. And it's quite debilitating quite a lot of the time. I mean, sometimes you kind of take it on the chin. It's part and parcel. And, you know, we used to sort of say, well, it's like a free rehearsal. And
yes.
I think, well, actually, it wasn't a free rehearsal because we had to hire a van. And we've travelled 300 miles. There was petrol, and we ate, you know, a couple of times.
That's it.
You know, sometimes we probably had breakfast. So, you know, so yeah, you could sort of see it as being a free rehearsal, but actually it was a rehearsal that cost us £400. It's part of the thing, isn't it? It's what you sign up for.
Absolutely,
I think probably. Toughened you a little bit, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Toughened you. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. There's that whole thing, is it, that you learn more from the bad gigs than the good ones, and that's even comedy has certainly toughened me up. It's being sort of fundamentally shy as a person, and now there's still elements of that, but it's not as bad as it would have been had I not get into comedy. It's a funny one. It really, being stared at and hated by strangers will really knock the shyness out of you.
Oh, you know? Big time, man. Yeah, big time.
What was the name of the band?
We were called Little Ten.
Right.
Do you know what? Naming a band is one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once you kind of plump for it, you could change it, but once you start, like, really going out there and doing stuff, you can't really do much about it. I think it's one of those things where you just hope that it doesn't really matter and people just, you know, like the name is just becomes synonymous with you and what you do. And it's not, you know, I remember someone saying to me, there's a band called Korn. That's a really shit name for a band, but they're really good. And they're like, loads of people really like them. So, you know, don't really worry about what the band's called. you know, so I think, yeah, so that was, you know, so anyway, we were called Little Ten and yeah. And that Glastonbury experience was amazing. And I think the headline, was Flaming Lips were headlining on our stage.
It's an epic one.
Yeah, because I mean, you just like think. Well, I mean, I think they were on the Pyramid stage a couple of years later.
Brilliant.
So it was amazing to like go and, you know, be able to see so many great bands as well.
Yeah,
as being there.
Absolutely. Talking to somebody the other day, they were talking about who I've seen live, and I was rattling off all these names, and I'm like, you've seen loads of people. I'm like, well, I used to work at Glastonbury selling t-shirts.
So
I got to see The Lars, I got to see Garbage, I got to see Faithless and all these massive bands, and for free, really. Which was cool. And I think about it now, because like, we were going to play Glastonbury, do the comedy tent last year. So I was a bit gutted that we couldn't do that, but other than that, I think my festival days are done now.
Do you think?
I think so. I mean, I'm 49. I like a shower, and I like a decent bed.
Because do you know what we wandered into? Because obviously we had this backstage passes, and we did wander into the, you know, what was deemed as the VIP area.
Yeah,
but it was very low leveled VIP, I would say. The toilets were still pretty green. there was still a lot of mud, and there were still like paper cups and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like we were walking into like some amazing venue, like with the O2 or something, and we were getting a proper green room.
It was still
pretty shite. So, you know, I think that. Yeah, the idea that you get sort of this sort of privileged sort of bit. It's not so. I guess if you're like, you know, like I say, if you're a big headline act, then you get the entourage and everything. But you probably get like a nice caravan or something set up for you.
Yeah.
But for the likes of us, we're still sort of slamming it in.
It is funny when you see it. I was lucky enough to MC a festival just before everything got locked down again last year in the beginning of September, and Gabrielle was on and people like that, and she rocked up very last minute. So all of her band were already there. They're all set up, ready to go. And I'm ready to introduce her, and I'm like, where is she? I should be here in a minute. And then this blacked out bus turns up, and she gets escorted out and with her, a couple of people helping her up the stairs. And it really was like royalty had turned up. It was really weird, you know?
And this is no offence to Gabrielle.
Yeah.
But Dreams Can Come True was quite a while ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, everyone says that, and then you go, yeah. But they still have that. I don't know. I don't know what goes on the rest of the day, like if they go to Asda.
Well, I'd love to know that, actually. Or is it Waitrose? I mean, maybe Waitrose.
Probably Waitrose. She seems like a Waitrose kind of gal.
Honestly, this is like, no offence to Gabrielle. I mean, sure, she's got a huge following still, but it's funny, isn't it? I guess maybe if you're just used to that, maybe that's what you require to get you going. Do you know what I mean? Like, you require that kind of that support to do the gig.
Yeah, maybe. And she did have some killer heels on, so maybe it was that.
Yeah.
She just needed help because she was wearing them. But she was lovely as well. She was great.
I bet she was.
It wasn't like snooty and things like that. When she rocked up and I sort of stood next to her, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Gabrielle. And she was lovely. So, yeah, she wasn't up her own arse, which was nice.
No, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was nice. Do you know what? Talking about being positive, and I'm going to change the subject a bit here. What I love, your output on social media is so positive. It's so refreshing to see. Like, in amongst all the, everyone's sort of looking for the next story to all pile on and the next outrage. They want to be the one that discovers the outrageous story, don't they? So everyone just, and they go, oh, I found this. And in amongst it all, it's like, you're going, just look after yourselves. Take care. Hope you're all right. Stay. And I'm like, this is really nice. It's just a nice thing, and I don't want you to think it goes unnoticed, because it doesn't. It's a really nice, shouting and hollering. And you're quite a positive person anyway. I suppose you're like everyone, just sort of up and down.
Yeah. I mean, that up and down is probably pretty fair, but I think it's funny. Obviously social media's got like a, you know, people often quite down about it, and rightly so. It can be quite toxic at times, and particularly over the last few years, I think it has sort of seeped into everyday lives with regards to like politics, and become, you know, as a society, we've become very binary, haven't we? We have one thing or another, and you're in this tribe or you're in that tribe, or you're against me or you're with me.
That's right. Kind of stuff,
You know, and I think, I've always had quite a positive experience on social media. I mean, I've met loads of and collected with loads and loads of amazing people, and you know, had really positive conversations and connections. So I think, I guess, it's kind of wanting to. I mean, yeah, I think generally speaking, like, kindness and positivity have all been a big part of who I am. And you know, if I guess, you know, I want to showcase that stuff more than, you know, I mean, I'm fallible like everybody else. I get annoyed by stuff, and sometimes I jump in on things. But generally speaking, I think that's actually a bit of a waste of my energy sometimes. And actually, my energy would be better put into putting out sort of slightly nicer things and a nicer message.
Yeah.
Hopefully other people can, you know, can feel that too. And maybe it will seep into a few other people's kind of ideas about the world, because I think we just think that the world is so dark, and it's you know, it's particularly at the moment where it's been so difficult for everybody, it's been such a hard time. Just having a bit of positivity and a bit of kindness and compassion.
But it's almost like, it feels sometimes when you're trying to be positive, people are, they don't want it. It's almost like they're like, oh, why? How can you be that way? Look at this. This is happening. Mm. How can you be that when this is going on? And they're like, but I can't change that. I can't do any. Me chipping in. And I'm like you. I learned the hard way. chipping in or getting involved, and you don't come out of it very well. You don't feel good afterwards. You just you end up in arguments with people that,
yeah,
you know, you just wouldn't do that in real life. And it was, like you say, complete waste of time and energy. And it's a shame. Like, you try and be positive, but people just don't seem to want it at the moment. They want to be outraged and upset, and it's like, it almost feels like that's the only thing that will validate their existence.
I agree. And one of the reasons I don't like to get too involved with like difficult subjects and controversial things is I don't always feel like I'm informed enough.
Yeah, true.
And I think that's the case for probably quite a lot of people. They might not be informed enough, but they have an opinion anyway. And I think, well, actually, sometimes think about the thing, find out a bit more about it, maybe. If you're desperate to write something about it, then, and put it out there, then that's fine. But, you know, sometimes I think, you know, there's a thing I do sometimes. I will write something and then I'll give myself a couple of minutes just to see whether I definitely want to hit that send button.
Oh, yeah.
And then, do you know what? A lot of the time, specifically if I'm jumping in on something, I will delete it and say, it's not worth my. I'll tell you, something happened yesterday, for example. Our local school, well, the school my boys go to, secondary school, they have names for the houses, like in the school, so like the year groups.
Okay.
So they had, you know, and they've named them after iconic people. So, for example, Churchill, they've got a Rowling house, they've got Mandela house, Florence, like Nightingale house. So they've got these different houses that are iconic figures from history, basically.
Yeah.
And the school has decided to remove these names and choose actually names from areas around where we live. So like Cookmere Haven, that'll be a house at Haven. Okay. And that, you know, it makes sense, you know, like have something there. But one of the reasons they did it was because the school council, so the students, want to reiterate that to the students, the school body, the school council decided that they felt that some of those icons were not in keeping with the ethos of the school, you know, that idea of togetherness and equality and, you know, trans rights and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, you know, they felt like people like Churchill and J.K. Rowling more recently weren't appropriate people to have in the conversation. And I think that is and it was voted for by the students. It was their decision, and I think it's a correct one, you know. So, and I think it was a bold move. It's been leaked to the press, so like, and the right wing press. So the Telegraph, and then it seeped down to people like Lawrence Fox and Julie Hartley-Brew and all these other people. And I have nothing against those people. It's fine, you know, but they bellow about freedom of speech, but obviously when students and kids have freedom of speech, it's a different thing. Anyway, to cut long story short, I was typing up a retort, and I thought, do you know what? It's, in some respects, I want to support my local school and I believe in what they're doing, but I just felt like, do you know what? I don't want to go in there.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think it would just be, it's not going to make me necessarily feel any better.
No, it doesn't change anything. And you're like you say, you're going to feel shit. And the thing is, it'll blow up now, but then tomorrow there'll be the next thing that everybody's outraged about. And it's none of these things ever get resolved. It's just, this is what we're shouting about today. And then everyone has a shout. And then the next day is like, now we're shouting about this. And you go, okay, so we're just shouting about stuff, are we?
Yeah.
Doesn't change anything.
And I think I think actually doing that, like thinking a little bit more about what I'm about to put out there and maybe not putting it out there, deleting it or whatever, is a way of me turning the volume down a little bit in my own head, as well as, you know, what's already, you know, a very, very noisy kind of place.
Yeah. It used to be, everyone's entitled to their opinion and their thoughts and things, and it's up to them. And some people say some things that are horrible about other people, and that's just how people are. You're not going to change that by shouting and hollering at everybody. There's no discussion about stuff. It's just there's not an understanding of, oh, well, look, you're not, this is, that's just how they think. So, unfortunately, that's up to them. And you've just got to make sure you're taking care of your bit and looking out for people. And that's up to them. And hopefully they'll just find their own tribe and they can all bugger off somewhere else on their own. And yeah. We can do our own thing and keep out of each other's way. But there's none of that. It's like, it just seems that everyone's marauding through, just trying to get rid of every sniff of evilness. And you're just never going to do it. It's just never going to happen, unfortunately. It's just, we just have to find a way of ignoring these people, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because Lawrence Fox isn't changing anything, is he? He's just gobbing off, and it's like, but he doesn't change anything.
And I think also it's, you know, like, I do stop and think as well, like, trying to put my compassionate head on, like, actually thinking, you know, what is, you know, what's... what's going on in those people's lives that they feel like, you know, I mean, there's I think, you know, there's some damage there, or there's something that's not quite right, or that they're lacking in something that makes them feel like they have to do that. So I have to sort of think that, and again, that's not going to help by me joining any debates particularly. No.
We talk about that all the time, my Mrs. Jade and I, about compassion and understanding. And, you know, there's obviously something, like you've literally just said, there's obviously a reason why these people feel this way. And it's, we're not trained to deal with that. You're certainly not going to deal with it on Twitter. So, you know, that's up to them to go and sort out and hopefully find a way through it. But... yeah, so it's not. I enjoy your posts that you do. You know, trying to be positive. It's nice. It's refreshing.
Thank you.
I really like that. And then you write children's books. I mean, there's nothing more positive than that.
It's funny. Like we were saying about tough gigs, going to a school and reading your book to 30 kids. That honestly, that's up there. I mean. That's a really brutal awakening. Yeah. That is when you don't
How did you feel the first time you had to do that?
Oh, I was really nervous, actually.
Yeah,
far more nervous than playing Glastonbury or anything like that.
Yeah, really.
Really? Yeah, I don't know why. I do know why, because one, you've got to try and keep their attention really quite instantly. Otherwise, you lose the room quite quickly.
Kids are more honest, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're brutally honest. And yeah, I mean, actually, having said that, most of the time it's been pretty pleasurable. But yeah, there are occasions where you know, it's more when I've done things like not necessarily reading the books. They tell that stuff's all right. But what if I do like a talk or something? That can bomb sometimes when I'm doing talks.
What got you into writing children's books? Is it something you always wanted to do, or?
Well, no, I think, you know, sort of stemming on from the band stuff, when the band broke up, which is, you know, it's a tragic thing. It's like being in a relationship with the love of your life and you break up, and it's devastating. And I think I was just sort of searching around for other kind of creative projects, and then, you know, found out my wife was pregnant with our first, and I think it was just wanting to do something or create something for him. And I started with the idea of maybe writing a song or something. And I thought, nah, that's going to sound rubbish. And then I thought, well, what about a story? I could write a story. I used to write lyrics and stuff in the band, and I'd written a bit of poetry, and then it kind of stemmed from there, really. And I started just looking around what other kind of books are out there and soaking up. I tend to do that when I'm into starting a new project of whatever it might be. I sort of become a bit ravenous for that creative genre, whatever it might be. You know, I mean, the band stuff, I was constantly listening to music, other people's music. And I mean, I'm still obviously really big into music, but yeah, I do come a little bit obsessed, I would say. Seeing how the craft works is, you know, often I'm kind of going into something that I don't know that much about. So it's trying to learn the craft and sort of teach myself, I suppose.
I know what you mean. It's like when I get asked about this, people say, how did you start this? What was the thinking? And like, I don't know. I just wanted to do a podcast. And then it kind of evolved into what it is now. There wasn't really a plan. It just, obviously subconsciously something was obviously going on that steered it into this into the realms of mental health, but it wasn't the plan at the beginning. And but since then, you know, I've like you, I've immersed myself in books and all sorts of things to learn more about mental health and people, and, you know, and because I'm fascinated by people. It, you know, that I love is the fact that people can tell you so much without actually saying anything. So like we were just saying about Lawrence Fox and people like that. When you hear what they're saying, you're like you said, it's like there's obviously something else going on. And that's what fascinates me about people. It's like, why are they saying that? Why are they acting that way? What's going on? And yeah, and through this podcast, I'm now immersed myself in. So we watch stuff on the TV. We watch all these murder shows and things like that. And and Jade and I sit there like working it all out. We're like, become these
Man, I love those sort of things.
Yeah, and you sit there like two cut price detectives trying to work it all out.
Yeah, like you say, it's the things that people don't say sometimes, isn't it? It's the most telling. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the same with the podcast I do with Jim Daly, Blank. It was a case of wanting to tap into other people's knowledge or experiences so it could inform our own.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, that's why I love doing podcasts, because you can have these kind of really rich conversations with people. And learn so much about yourself.
Well, this is it, exactly. And you've had some incredible guests.
We've been very lucky. Yeah. Well, you have too.
Well, yeah, this is it. You kind of, there's something to be said for putting positivity out into the world. It kind of, it does attract people. When I look down the list of who I've had on, I'm like, bloody hell.
Yeah, you know? I know, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's nice. But like you say, talking to these people, has it made me realise we're all fundamentally the same, really, you know? Doesn't matter how successful or where you're at in the world, most people still have the same insecurities and the same worries, and it's been fascinating.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, from the get-go when we started doing Blank, I mean, the idea of it was that we were going to sort of talk to creative people about, you know, the difficult creative moments, I guess, but it's completely evolved, and I'm sure you've alluded to the fact that yours has sort of changed and evolved and moved from when you started, because, you know, obviously that was a stepping stone, but now we like those things, those blank things, those difficult things mean so many different things to different people. Now we're talking about imposter syndrome, public failure, social anxiety, all these different things are coming up, grief, sleep deprivation, whatever it might be. And, it's for every single person, it's different. And like Jim and I say, it's our therapy session every week.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because we get to like offload with each other. I mean, I'm sure that not always the guest is like, they think they're going to come and talk about a film or something, but you know, we end up bearing our souls, which is a beautiful thing, actually.
It's funny, I had some people message me on this, and they said, your honesty is refreshing, and you're like, I don't have anything to hide. You know, the things, the shitty things I've done, they're not bad. They weren't great, but they weren't that bad. You know, it was just bad behaviour. It wasn't anything awful. But so I'm able to be honest but like you say, it's therapy session for me. I say the things and people will go, oh yeah, I did that. And you're, oh, thank God for that. I thought it was weird.
I mean, it's very much the same. You know, every week there's something I think, that's me. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I do start to think, fuck, there's quite a lot of stuff wrong with me. But at the same time, I guess that is, you know, we've all had moments of various different things, haven't we? Whatever it might be.
Of course we have.
So it's just it's that reassurance, I think.
Yeah, but it's this misunderstanding that, you know, that people that are well known have had it all sussed all along, that and their plan was to get where they are now, and 9 times out of 10, they're the same as us. They kind of had a rough idea, but they didn't really know. You know, they just kind of bumbled along and made mistakes, and you know, and they don't have it sussed at all. In fact, it's probably quite the opposite. When you, what we would perceive as success, is them. They're still trying to hang on to that by their fingertips. You know, it's not just like, oh, I've made it, now I can just relax. It's like, no, you've still got to keep doing the work and putting it out there. And yeah, it's there's never it, I've learned that from this. There's no destination, is there? It's just there's always somewhere you've there's always the next bit you've got to achieve, the next part of the journey, if you want, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And I mean, I'm yeah, I think I'm, you know, I said like the podcast constantly evolves, but I think I'm constantly evolving as a human.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, like what we were saying earlier about like making decisions on what fights to pick and decisions on what things to put out in the world. I'm constantly sort of, you know, evolving in that respect and
yeah,
seeing how I can be a better person, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's
and I don't
it.
Mean
that's,
that in a, like, how can I be really generous or like, you know, helpful. I just mean like, how can I be better?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. It's funny, this week, the other day we were doing, there's a watch party, a co-video party on Twitter. Mm. And Alison Spittle, comedian, picks a, there's a category, everyone sort of votes for a film and then we all sit and watch. And then we all tweet about the film. It's like Tim Burgess listening parties. Amazing. So we're doing that. So the other day was Twilight. So we're all taking the piss out of Twilight and, you know, making it like, all the way through, we're all commenting on it. It was really funny. But then I looked, I lost loads of followers because I'd just been slagging off Twilight. Like, oh, really? And even on that level, you're like, oh shit, I've probably upset someone here. But yeah.
Well, I guess you didn't realise you had so many Twilight fans following you.
I had no idea. I had no idea that the Venn diagram.
They'd never revealed that to you.
It just made me realise you've got to be careful. You can't even on that level, you know, you can upset
funny,
someone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's and I think like with social media, it's obviously it's quite easy to upset people or offend them.
Mm.
But also, I think sometimes you don't even realise you've upset someone, and then you think, "Oh, they've blocked me. What's happened?" And you know, and I guess it, you know, it allows people to be anonymous. But you know, you can be, you know, like that. I don't like that phrase, but that phrase "ghosting," where people just like sort of shun you out of their lives. And that's very easy to do on those platforms, you know. And that can be really tough to take sometimes. I'm sure you didn't. You know, obviously you didn't mean to offend anybody.
Not at all.
You were just having an opinion about, you know, about a movie. But
yeah, we were just having a laugh.
Yeah.
And I genuinely, I said to Jade yesterday, I'm like, oh, I've lost loads of people. And we were talking about it. She went, don't worry. Look, they're not real fans of yours. And
exactly.
And it's like, you know, don't worry about it. But it did up. I was like, oh, man, I don't want to upset anyone. I was just having a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I think, well, I mean, I guess, you know, that speaks volumes of you as a person in that you know, you worry about those things, you know, because there's something, you know, that mean, you know, you've got, I mean, some people just don't give a monkeys, do they? And it's, you know, I don't care what I say. I, you know, I'm happy to offend whoever and I'll take the consequences. But, you know, I guess that shows, you know, I'd be the same as you. I'd be really like beat myself up about it. Yeah. And upset because I think I don't want to hurt anybody or, you know,
yeah,
or
same.
Upset anybody. And I think, you know, but I think that again, that you've got to see that as that, you know, sometimes that's on the other person. That's not, you know, that's not on you.
That's true. I do take responsibility for all of it. Yeah. Like, well, they're strangers. You don't know these people. I'm like, no, but I don't want to make people feel shit like that. I don't want that. And but it's all part of human nature, isn't it? You can't be liked by everyone. And
you can't please everybody.
No.
I mean, I know you can't. And to try, I think is, you know, A, is probably impossible. You can't, because you can't.
Yeah.
And I think, like I was saying about energy, I think you're just, you know, you're using that energy up on that where you could be using it in another direction and
true.
It would be more useful for you and for maybe some other people.
Yeah.
You also hate Twilight.
Or Twiglet, as someone said. There's a mate, Steve Priest, who listens in and he sent me, and he called it Twiglet and it really made me laugh.
I've only seen the first one.
Well, this is what it was the first one. I don't know. Good luck to everyone, the fans.
It's kind of emo, the movie, isn't it?
It's like Dawson's Creek with better teeth.
Yeah.
And it's just,
yeah.
You know.
You've just lost a whole bunch of followers, and I probably have as well.
Oh, shit. All right.
Sorry, anybody that sorry, loves everyone.
Or Twiglet.
Twiglet is other people. Yeah.
But what do you do when you have your down days? And you mentioned sleep deprivation or lack of sleep. In this lockdown that I've realised that, and I know it's probably obvious to everybody else, but sleep is so important. That when you don't have enough, the self-loathing is awful.
I kind of refer to myself, now proper insomniacs will probably say, well, you're not an insomniac then. But I sort of say I'm a part-time insomniac because I have periods of very good sort of sleep.
Yeah.
You know, where I sleep 7 hours a night and then periods of sleeping like maybe 2-3 hours a night.
Really?
I guess, physical things that I'm probably not doing properly, like, you know, switching off devices and all that kind of stuff. I sometimes go to bed listening to a podcast or radio, and that sometimes disturbs sleep a bit more. But generally, I can't really pinpoint necessarily why sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. But huge detriment to, well, physical and mental well-being, I think.
Absolutely.
I really do think that. And I stupidly bought that book. I can't remember the author's name, but it's called Why We Sleep. And it's all the it's like a horror story.
No!
I mean, if you have bad sleep, it's basically telling you how you're going to die very soon.
Oh God! But that's it, isn't it? It's when your body repairs itself and it sets you up for the next day. And if you're only getting a couple of hours, your body's not had a chance to regroup.
It's really wrecking you. And you do feel kind of hungover, don't you, when you don't have a good... I mean, I really struggle with... I mean, I'm a bit sort of a night owl. I like staying out watching TV or, you know, just whatever, reading or whatever it might be. And, I probably should probably lie in, but our son gets up at 6 and comes and wakes us up, so that never helps. So I think, I think that's probably something to do with it. But I think, my friend's he's a dementia nurse.
Yeah.
And he's always telling me horrible things about if you don't get enough sleep.
Oh, no.
All these, like, proteins that don't process in your brain during the night if you don't get enough sleep. So basically, I don't think I've got many years left.
It's a good job we got you on.
It's good to get me in now because, you know.
Halfway through, we're like, who is this? What? What's going on? But it's true, though. It's so true. Like, last night, I had a decent kip. I feel, so I was up and ready today and prepared for this and the day ahead. And I've managed to have breakfast and coffee and a banana. But there's days where we'll go to bed at 2 or 3 and then I'll be awake again at 7, 8. And you just feel dreadful.
Yeah, really dreadful. I think they say something like you need 2 really good sleeps, like 2 full sleeps to recover from a bad one.
Really?
So if you're having like several like bad ones in a row or something, then it's going to take you a long time to recover from it, you know. The statistics are stark, I think, like when you look into it. And it's something that I'm trying to get better at, basically, probably putting better things in place.
Yes.
In the evenings and making sure that my wife sleeps really well, annoyingly. She'll like hit the pillow and she's asleep.
Jade does. She's just out. And I can't move her. The amount of times I leave her on the sofa.
Yeah. my wife is completely like that. It's almost like a superpower. I mean, it's a problem, not a great superpower, but I mean, I do envy her quite a lot of the time that she can switch off.
When you're older, it's a super, it's a, it is, yeah. When you're younger, you want to be able to run around or be invisible and things like that. But now you're in, you're older, you're like, just some kip.
I just want to be like, if I could just turn myself off.
Get a good eight hours.
Yeah, and then it's sort of, it's impressive how she does it. But yeah, I think it's something I need to, certainly need to work on with regards to how I, the routine of getting into sleep.
Yeah,
I think mean, I remember talking, we talked to Dawn French about it, and she said she had a, sorry, I didn't mean to climb.
No, go on. Do you know what, that's a funny thing with this. I keep, because I've spoken over you a couple of times, I do apologise.
No,
don't
worry.
We can't see each other.
No, it's you fine. No.
Yeah, but go on.
Sorry. sorry, I apologise a lot.
Me too.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's all good. But yeah, sorry, Dawn
French. She was, she has like bouts of insomnia, I think, or bouts of bad sleep. And she said that she just gets up and restarts. She like reboots the routine. So she'll get up, get herself a drink, wander around the house, maybe read a bit, and just go back into relaxing before bed, and then go back to bed.
Okay.
And it's quite an interesting way of doing it. And I think it's something that I've tried to do a little bit of, like getting up, just don't, like just lying there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're awake and just lying there, that's can be quite soul destroying, I think, sometimes.
Oh, so, oh God, yeah. And I think having the bedroom in a nice calming environment to go to sleep. So like we've got some nice lighting and things like that, and a big old comfy bed, and it's just nice. And funny you mentioned Dawn French. Jade and I were lucky enough to went to hers for tea.
And
we were really lucky. Jade had worked with her or met her or something, and she just said, look, if you're ever down this way, give us a shout. And you know, like normally you go, oh, we're not gonna do that, it's embarrassing, but we were there and we went, shall we? And we were like, well, you wouldn't hurt. And she went, yeah, come around later on. And we went round.
Amazing.
And she showed us, and it's funny you say about, because her, I'm not giving too much away here, but her bedroom, there's nothing in it. It's just this calm, just a bed, and it's just calm. I was like, oh, that's what you want. It's like a nice sort of cocoon to just drift off in, not too many distractions. And
that's
if
lovely,
you can,
yeah.
leave your phone in the other room. If you don't need it, you know, get an alarm clock if you need one.
Yeah.
And just that, have a calming environment.
I think that is definitely the way. I mean, unfortunately, my office space is in our bedroom.
Oh, really?
And if I wake up, I just see work.
How does that must affect you subconsciously?
Well, sometimes it's like, oh, okay, that's work. I can turn over and think, you know, like metaphorically kind of turn over and think I'm shutting that away. But other times, yeah, you're like, oh, okay, things start to pop in your head, don't they? And
yeah,
you think, oh, I've got to do that. Oh, I've got to do that. And tomorrow I must remember to do that. Blah, blah, blah. So yeah, so it can be difficult sometimes for sure. But it's the only place we can house me.
exactly. None of us are living in castles, are we?
No.
Yeah, it's like today with this, like Jay's got a thing to do, and then I've got some stuff, and there was this, and yeah, and trying to juggle it all, and it's a funny one, isn't it? It's now we're all locked in; you can't go anywhere to do it elsewhere.
Exactly that.
And you've got.
I'm glad you went and saw Dawn, because she was one of the best guests, definitely. She's such a
amazing. I remember saying, I mean, I've always been a fan of hers since the young ones. We're seeing her in that.
Yeah.
And I've always loved her. And then when we went there, and I was sort of, and Jay in the car there, Jay's going, play it cool. You don't, right? And I'm like, I will. No, it's going to be fine. And people listening, not showing off by saying this, it was just one of those freak things that happened. And we got there and I'm walking along and then she's at the door and then she's like, hey, how are you doing? And she looked at me and she went, can I have a hug? And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, no.
And then we hugged. Because I remember saying years ago to the mother of my children, I'm like, I wonder what Dawn French smells like. And now I know. She smells divine.
She does. She is. She's a beautiful human being. And one of those ones that you just... She's just what she is. She lives up to everything that you'd hope she would be.
Yeah, she does. Absolutely. Mm. You've had Louis Theroux as well.
We have. We've been very lucky to have Louis on.
How was Louis?
Louis was fantastic. Yeah, he was a brilliant guest.
He's so great at interviewing and
I was quite, him, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of his work. So that, in some respects, that was quite an easy one in a lot of ways, because I know his work so well. And I think he was writing his memoir at that point that came out, you know, the get through this. So he was really sort of, he tapped into a lot of his kind of older stories and stuff. So we sort of talked a lot about that kind of thing. So that was interesting to him, for him to sort of open up a bit more about his personal life.
Yeah.
He talked quite a long time about glass blowing. He was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He did. When he lived in Cape Cod, he worked for a glass blowing company.
Wow.
And did a lot of glass blowing. And he told us about the Medicchio technique and stuff.
Oh, really?
I remember it very, very vividly, the conversation. But what was funny was that, because he's an incredibly funny man. That's the thing. I think he's actually got such a brilliant sense of humour. He was telling us that the place he worked at, they made cherubs, glass cherubs.
Yeah.
And
wow.
During the, yeah, I mean, quite intricate glass blowing. Yeah. And then he said what happened is that they would get import penises to put on the cherubs. But some of them came in different sizes. So he said they started to get complaints because some penises were bigger than other penises and some of them were a bit too sharp. So they ended up having to, he had to help craft this sort of glass loincloth that they would put over the over the penises, which was just a fantastic anecdote.
Imagine that, problematic cherub penises. Yeah. Sounds like a great band name.
It does. That's a brilliant band name, definitely. Problematic cherub penises. That's a definite punk band, isn't it? I think.
It, isn't it? Yeah. Real, up there with Screwdriver and people like that. Yeah. Oh, this has been lovely. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been so nice to talk to you.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. No, thank you so much for having me on. No, it's really lovely to chat to you.
We'll do this again, I think. It'd be lovely. Yeah, excellent. And where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on all the social media things at Eli is Tender 10. So it's ELIISTENDER 10. And yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. And then obviously Blank Pod, you can find us on all the podcasty places. And my books are available in the good and bad bookshops.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much, mate. This has been...
it's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's just nice. I know we're connected on social media and you are exactly as I expect you to be, an absolutely top-notch human being. Thank you so much. It's been lovely.
Insane in the membrane.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.